Hi and welcome to Backstage with Architects Insight 2010, and it's a great pleasure to have with me here David Sprott from Everware CBDI International. So David, absolute pleasure to talk to you, and thank you very much for the keynote this morning. It was a very illuminating.
My pleasure.
And fascinating. Nobody mentions this at Microsoft, and it's not that we're embarrassed. I think we should celebrate the fact that you mentioned it's 10 years or so since .NET arrived on the planet, and .NET Web services in particular, and as we know, your specific area of focus around SOA over the years, web services, .NET web services, were a key part of that to some extent. That was a great sort of way to remind us all, you know, that actually SOA has been around for a while and potentially has some way to go. Where are we in terms of sort of SOA maturity? Have we solved the problem?
Well, yeah, it's fantastic because we have been doing this thing now for 10 years, in fact longer, but I chose that sort of turn of the millennium because it's a nice thing to think about and think back to. But if you think of industry trends, they typically last a few years and then they roll through and you know, get replaced with something else. Whereas SOA has remained very strong. It's remained top of the toy box. It's, you know, the choice of every industry analyst that you know they want to recommend and talk about and research and so on. And the reason for this, of course, is that it's not a product. It's not a technology. It's actually an architectural pattern, and it's an architectural style. And therefore, it will persist for a long time. We might envisage that in the same way as the patterns that we put into the mainframe arena 40 years ago, dare I say it, you know, SOA, the architectural pattern, will still be around in 50 years' time. We will still be using it. Of course, we will evolve, and that, in fact, was my talk this morning.
Yeah.
But in terms of where we are with SOA today, there's no doubt that the last decade has been focused very much on the introduction and exploitation of SOA in a relatively tactical way. And I think all of us architects feel that the end point, the end goal for an enterprise is having a well-structured enterprise where service architecture reflects the nature of that enterprise. And what we see is that the achievement by government departments and enterprises against that end goal is quite spotty. And a lot of that is because, you know, we've been in a boom period, and so therefore, you know, there's been a lot of, oh, let's go and do this, let's go and do that, but there hasn't been a lot of, let's do the thing properly. And so therefore, what I'm now seeing is that there is an interest in doing things properly. And that's primarily because the economic circumstances have changed. We've got tight budgets, we've got an intense focus on cost reduction, intense focus on being much more agile, being able to introduce new innovative business models coming out of the recession, which put, if you like, organizations into a much better competitive position moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember some time, well, many moons, it may have been actually the 10 years or so ago, writing an SOA description in the company I work with, and there I incorporated EDA effectively by talking about business process management in context of SOA, and a colleague said, well, that's not SOA. And I said, well, it is, because, you know, actually one without the other, it's not usable enough. And I think, you know, when you said EDA to people in the room, you perhaps got a show of hands. Some people recognised the term, but after your explanation of what it meant, and if you'd asked them again, you know, does anybody do EDA? I reckon their response would have been all the hands in the air, because in a sense, people, you can't do SOA in isolation of thinking about the events that a business requires, that the processing of events, the business process management in that sense. You know, it's not sufficient just to think in pure SOA terms in a real-world situation.
And I think that's right. What's going to happen is that SOA will morph and it will evolve. We will introduce new patterns.
So do we need to broaden its definition? Dare I say it, does cloud trump SOA? Is it the final?
No, not at all, I'm afraid. I think that cloud is enabled by services. And I think, as I've said, that's one of the reasons why many organizations are placing a lot of priority on that. But cloud in itself is an architectural style for deployment. SOA and services is primarily a business and a logical architecture level of abstraction. And that the two complement each other very, very well. Mm. One of the things I talked about this morning was that cloud actually should not be regarded as a replacement for today's deployment approach, which is, okay, where are we going to deploy these apps? Mm. What we should be doing is viewing our service architecture and our event architectures and saying, what is the best way of deploying this? And security, frankly, is one of the primary considerations, which says, today, most people are going for private cloud, most enterprises are going for private clouds because of the security issues in that deployment. But that if we take a very, very clearly traced view from the business architecture to the service and event architecture, we can actually refine that view of the security and deployment views very much better than if we quite simply looked at it from a technological point of view.
Yeah. I mean, it's simply that you can't take that blanket view of security, in my opinion. You have to apply it to different zones of your business, and by having listening to somebody talking about architectural principles and how useful they were, and it was more at the software architecture level. And my grievance there was that it was, you know, to have reuse, you know, as a principle is just, it's clearly not right in my mind, because, you know, you can, a byproduct of reuse is over engineering against a requirement that never happens, you know, never materializes. So we, you know, the kind of whole agile doing enough to solve a specific problem, and really, I think if we take these things as being blanket, then the enterprise will never get past the private cloud, and they'll never be able to take advantage. Now, you know, to take the analogy from Ian Mortimer of the outside in organization, the orange metaphor, and peeling it back, but actually turning it inside out, allowing you to multi-source services from different suppliers, to take advantage of that gravy train, that opportunity, an organization can't look at these things in blanket. They can't have blanket architectural principles, or they need to apply them more dynamically. Would you agree with that?
I very much agree. Now, one of the things, again, I'm talking about a lot, I talked about this morning, is the notion of ecosystem rather than enterprise. And that the real world actually operates in ecosystems. Mm. You know, you have all of the operators in an airport, the airlines, the security operators, the retail operators, and
so on. That works well in when you've got the physical world of supply chains, you know, or you're dealing with processes that are physical, you know, taking a luggage from A to B, often to C or X, you know. But, you know, in that world, and I think there are lessons we can learn from that, the world of retail and supply chains, I was saying this earlier as well. But in the world of other abstract processes that go on in enterprises, in banks or high-tech kind of enterprises.
You'd be surprised in high-tech particularly. There's a very high level of interoperability between organizations. Banking, the same applies. You have the interoperability with...
That's the driver, that want to interoperate or be able to have more of a composable enterprise. Is that the driver here?
I believe that...
Is that what business wants?
Well, I think it is. What we're seeing is that business are looking and examining very, very carefully what their real business is. Mm. And they're hiving off the things that are non-core.
Yeah.
But even when they hive off the non-core businesses, they're still wanting to integrate, or collaborate would be a better word, with them very, very well indeed.
Yes.
And
yes.
So if you take banks, for example, you see examples where high street chains are being hived off from banks at the moment. Mm. And so you've actually got demergers going on because, for example, governments think that the banks are too big. Mm. But as they get hived off, they're still going to work together.
Mm. Mm. So this composability of the business, or a business, is wanting to sort of identify what's core and what's non-core. Do you think that businesses know what is core? Do they know what their business is fundamentally, or are they going through a voyage of discovery in that sense to really work out what is the differentiating function of my corporate business.
I think you actually put your finger right on it. The businesses at the moment are looking to optimise what they do,
yeah,
both from a cost point of view, but also from a business optimisation point of view.
You said innovation, didn't you?
Exactly.
It's innovating on the, what's the next thing I'm going to, how am I going to beat the market?
So what I'd say to you is that when you say to a business, what are you going to be doing tomorrow? They'll say, well, search me, Gov. I don't know.
Right.
What they'll say is these areas, you can imagine that we are likely to innovate very strongly in. Mm. These areas perhaps are likely to be more stable. But many organisations, like banks, will not actually be able to tell you what plans they've got for M&A, for a merger and acquisition, for example, or demerger. And so therefore...
Well, they're still detangling the result of the previous one.
Precisely. And so therefore, the need for flexible architectures and the need for the sort of things we've been talking about in terms of having much more separation and event architectures and service architectures together really help you do this. So by creating what is effectively an ecosystem within the enterprise, that gives you that huge flexibility to be able to respond.
The ecosystem being able to nurture innovation.
Exactly.
And support the business as it drives towards its future. That's fascinating, and I would like to continue, but I'm afraid I guess we need to wrap now. But that was fascinating insight to the world of SOA, and you know, the period of time that we're living in, I think, is just truly exciting, and it is this whole transformation that is we're a part of, and we haven't transformed completely yet, I think, is the upshot. And SOA, how much longer has it got to run? Will it outlive cloud?
Well, as I said this morning, SOA is a pattern, and it will still be around in 50 years' time.
When we're all
now, maybe we won't be around to see it.
But they'll still be practicing it.
Exactly.
Fantastic. Excellent. Well, pleasure to talk to you as always, and thanks very much for coming to Architect Insight.
My pleasure.
I guess just before we go, is there anywhere that you would point people to find out a bit more about what you're talking about here?
If they search on cbediforum.com, that's a good place to find us.
Oh, fantastic. Excellent. Well, great to talk to you.
Thank you. My pleasure.